I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the July 19th version of the Alloway Village Board Meeting. I'll call the meeting to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrick is excused. Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
Is there a motion to modify? Well, we will modify. We understand we have some folks from New Eye who came bright and early to our meeting, half an hour early, an hour early maybe. So thank you for that. So we won't penalize you. Let's move them up to 4B, right after public appearances, because I'm sure everyone in attendance will be very excited to hear what they have to say. Are there any other modifications to the agenda? Do I have a motion to accept the agenda as modified? Trustee Atwood, seconded by Trustee Harris. Any discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. Who wants to talk about flesh and water mains? Mr. Craig.
Well, during the dates that are shown on here, we will be doing our annual summer flushing of water mains. We do publicize that in the paper. Nothing major about it. It's routine maintenance to remove any sediment from the water mains, make sure that the dead end mains are fresh and so forth. So that's coming up this week and next week and part of the following week.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw them doing that on Hoffman today. I got a car wash. Okay. Partisan primary.
The partisan primary election will be held on August 9th. And if anyone is interested in absentee voting, you can do that here in our office between July 25th and August 5th during regular office hours.
Thank you. Another announcement was, I hear we had the farmer's market this week, and it was a great success. And if you haven't been to it, keep coming. Or those are on Thursday from 3:30 to 6:30. We also have our meeting tomorrow night. Brad, do you want to talk about that? Or Craig, you can talk about it. Or you pop it.
Yes, we have the public informational meeting on the proposed reconstruction plan for the next 5 years. That's tomorrow evening at 5:30 at St. Matthew's School. We'll have a presentation. We have a questionnaire for the attendees to fill out and offer their opinions and thoughts on the proposed projects. And we'll certainly answer questions and try to illustrate with some both the presentation itself and some poster boards to show some of the things that have been going on in the village and why we're proposing to do what we're doing. So that's tomorrow evening at 5:30.
Just to add, it's actually not going to be in the school. It's going to be in the gathering space of the church.
Yes. Where it's air conditioned.
Yes.
But I would encourage any of our residents to attend and invite your neighbors to attend. We have we have 55 miles of road here in Alloway, and we've done a lot of work to it, but we have a long way to go, and it's an expensive proposition, so we want to let our residents know what the project schedule is and look at ways to fund it. Is there any other announcements from staff? Mr. Clark?
Yes, I wanted to let the board know that last week Emerald Ash Borer was found in the city of DePere. It was located just south, about half a block south of the lagoon on Mandalay. We have not found it yet here in the village of Alloway, but I believe it's just a matter of time. Being that close, half a block away, it's pretty much inevitable. So I just wanted to update the board and let them know that this is the first finding outside of the city of Green Bay and the greater Green Bay area.
So what does that mean to us?
Well, it will mean that it will make our urban forestry operations a little bit more of a priority here in the future. You know, we'll start to see more and more of our ash trees, I believe, dying. And so we'll have to do more and more removal and replacement of those city's trees. So, and we will be getting some more additional public information out to the residents and that letting them know, you know that it's even closer now and to feel free to do some treatments and prepare.
And thanks.
There are quite a few ash trees in Callaway. I have two huge ones in my front yard, so I'm glad that he's told us that, and I'll make sure that I pass that along to the people as well.
Great. And we have another announcement. We have a grand opening of a new business here in Alloway. Quick Trip is going to be hosting an open house Wednesday, July 27th at their new Quick Trip Express located at 1401 Southwester Avenue in Alloway, 11 o'clock. So if you'd like to go welcome Quick Trip into town, 11 o'clock on the 27th. Any other announcements from the board? Hearing none, we will move on to public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak at tonight's meeting regarding anything that is not on this evening's agenda? Yes. Would you like to come up, please? Give us your name, address, social security number.
All right.
Right here? Yeah, right up there would be great. Just your name and address, if you would.
Hi, my name is Leslie Braney. I live at 240 Warren Court, and we are right between Webster Avenue and Riverside Drive. And the concern I had just didn't happen overnight. The concern I have has been going back a few years, and that is that the motorcycles that are racing up and down Riverside Drive and along Webster Avenue, even during this time of construction that this is going on. I know I speak for many of my neighbors, and some ways that I've tried to deal with it, wearing earplugs at night, because if you have your windows open, it's very noisy. You can hear these motorcycles going down like Riverside or Webster Avenue. Then they get on the onto 172. You can hear them racing all the way across. I have tried to handle it by calling the non-emergency 911 number, and they said they would let the officer who was on duty know about it. And I've talked to a couple policemen who are here, I should say officers, and they said they would be more, you know, try to be more aware of it. And the one officer I talked to who has the canine dog, and I believe it's like Brown County, has said, I had a chance. I walk on the trail twice a day. And so I see a lot of what's happening there. And he had his dog in the car with him, and he just said he lives near the reformatory. And he said when the shifts are changing is when he really notices that there are big offenders that are there. I'd like to think this isn't a lost cause, that we can't do something about this. Alloway is a great place to live. I'm sure some of you can relate to this noise from motorcyclists, but I'm noticing larger numbers of them traveling together. I'll give you an example. Probably about three Monday nights ago, down near Jimmy City's, there is, like, I guess it's a Thai restaurant that's down there. It used to be like the old Zeller's ski place. And Monday nights, they're not open. And I've had a few people, including our daughter, mention to us that there's 15 to 20 guys down there who are doing wheelies, popping wheelies, being noisy and everything. I really have no, you know, I'd like to say, okay, there's an easy way to this. I really don't know what the solution would be. I know our officers are very busy in many different areas. But I just feel that this each year, each summer, seems to get a little bit more out of control. Again, I want to thank the law enforcement officers for all their dedicated work that they do for us. But I just feel this is something that continually is getting worse as the summer progresses.
Is it at a special time of the day? Or?
I've been asked that question. And I feel that it starts late afternoon, maybe when some of the shifts are getting off. You can just hear them coming over 172 towards Alloway, getting off and just zooming down. You know, even when Riverside has some of the construction, I really noticed that some of them were really traveling fast. And I don't want to put all motorcyclists into the category of they're noisy, they're racing and everything. There's many responsible, you know, motorcyclist drivers out there who do a great job of following the rules, the laws. But I just think some of them with these really extremely loud engines and some of the speeding that they're doing needs to be addressed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'd just like to see safer crossings on Riverside Drive and a sidewalk on West St. Joseph Street at Riverside. I think that that should be paid for by the developer, not through the TIF money. And TIF money is everybody's money. That's tax money. It's there is no such thing as TIF money. It's just a reallocation of tax money that is being collected and not given to the county. So I'd like to see the crossing on St. Joseph Street to get to the Box River Trail, on Alloway Avenue to get to the Box River Trail, and on Taft Street to get to the river, Box River Trail. You have a lot of elderly and people in wheelchairs that need a safe way to get across. Thanks.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to talk about anything that's not on this evening's agenda? Just so I don't miss anyone later on, is there anyone who does want to speak to, about something that is on the agenda later on? Okay, if you change your mind, let me know. Okay, let's move on to item 4B, New Eye.
Hello.
Hello.
Always wonderful to be here in Alloway. I was asked by Administrator Lang to give an update on where we are with New Eye. I'll be giving a shorter one because next month I'll be actually coming back per our memorandum agreement. In August, you will receive the annual report of how your dollars were spent, what we've invested in, and receive a much more in-depth analysis of where the program is and what we're doing. But I did want to take this opportunity to introduce you to the Team Alloway interns. This is Stephen Bonney and Rod Henderson from NWTC's Digital Media Arts Program. They've been working the last few weeks with Brad to build some projects of films, and they would like to show you what they've done thus far. These are still in post-production, so there are some refinements that have to be done, but I think it'll give you a sense of what we're starting to go towards.
Great.
Come visit beautiful Green Isle Park in the village of Alloway. Located at the intersection of East River Drive and Green Avenue, the park features playgrounds, restrooms, picnic areas, basketball, volleyball, tennis, a walking trail, an ice rink, soccer field, fishing, and baseball diamonds. Green Isle also features an enclosed pavilion, which is available for rent 7 days a week throughout the year. Weddings, showers, family reunions, and company picnics. The pavilion is heated and includes kitchen facilities, a gas fireplace, and tables and chairs for up to 199 people. For more information, visit villageofalloway.com or call 920-448-2804. Village of Alloway, historically progressive.
Sure. Yeah. We just kind of took the made a script from some of the material that Brad had given us from the brochure, I think it was. And yeah, we can make any refinements. And we've actually shot a whole lot more footage than that, like hours, pretty much. We've kind of whittled it down to a 1 minute thing, so we just thought we'd give you an example of what we have.
Very nice. Mm-hmm.
Ones like that, we'll be adding in the sponsors and whatnot. We'll also probably be adding maybe a voiceover talking about where it's located, when it is, what time it is. Rob, you want to talk a little bit about that one?
Yeah, basically that's what we're going to do. Do some voiceovers and any input that you guys would like us to do with the videos, we'll welcome that. You see the music there, we put that together as well. You know, farmer's market, and we just thought about, you know, what would Uncle Jerry and Granny do? So we came up with that. And we really appreciate you guys taking us on to do this.
So for upcoming ones that they're going to be working on for Alloway, and let us know if you'd like to prioritize any of these, but we have other ones coming up for the Parks and Recreation on summer camp, recreational programs, and the rentals. They'll be making short promotional pieces for those. They'll be doing Alloway business profiles. They'll be working on some of the ordinance issues that Brad identified of grass length, fertilizer, how that equals phosphorus, stormwater retention, why do we sweep our streets, what does that mean, tree trimming, road rerouting information, and then recycling PSAs. If there's anything else that you feel we should add to our list, please feel free to either email me or talk to Trustee Dennis, who is your commissioner, and you can get that to me, and we can definitely add that to the project list for Alloway.
Great. Does anyone have any questions or comments? I hear you've agreed to tape our meeting tomorrow night?
Yes, we have.
Thank you.
We will be there tomorrow night, and then we will upload that to our website as well, so I can show you a quick example of what that looks like. So this is the New Eye website, where it's a central location where people can go to view all of the different communities that are participating. To access Alloway, you go down to the Village of Alloway. And once we have the channel live, it will be the first thing people see. So right now we just have a different screen. So right now Popeye is running as the live. We're building different blocks, and I'm testing them out right now. This isn't a public website yet. meaning that Google or Yahoo aren't finding it. If you went to the URL, you could see it, but it's still in development as well. An update for the cable channels, I spoke to Time Warner this morning, and they have promised me that it will be done this Friday, meaning that they will complete the installation. We'll probably spend a couple days next week testing the system to make it work and to make sure it works. And then next week, later in the week, we'll probably be having a soft launch to the general public. After that, we'll let you know about the hard start, and we'll probably have a large press event around that.
Brian, one of the things we might want to have the gentleman come and record is the grand opening of the Quick Trip.
The grand opening of Quick Trip.
The 27th, is that it?
Yep, 27th at 11 o'clock.
Yes, if that's possible, time for Brian.
What time is that?
11 o'clock.
Okay. I'll send it out, and we'll make sure that somebody's on site.
Here we go, Brian.
Yeah.
You want this?
Yeah, if I could.
And then just quickly, so you guys can see an example of what a community will look like once we do start uploading your videos.
For it. So then all of your, whether you have different committees you want to have, your board meetings, they can all be up here. And what's nice, the way we integrated it is if you wanted to have separate things, these are all just different YouTube galleries. So anything the village wanted to update separate, then are uploaded to YouTube separate from what New Eye is, we can make sure that those videos also have a link here so people would be able to view those as well.
And this will be a standalone URL that we'll be able to link to.
Yep.
Directly to our page from our website.
Correct. And each of these videos, too, is actually can actually be embedded directly into, as well as the live stream directly into your website.
Cool.
Any other questions?
All right. No, thank you very much for the update, folks. Thanks for your hard work.
See you next month.
Okay. Item number 5, hearing to consider vacation of a portion of River Lane. We don't need a motion on that, do we?
For the hearing section?
Yeah.
No. That's just bring the public comments.
Okay.
And then folks to hear.
Okay.
Just here.
Just here. Ready to go. So notice of public hearing. The Alloway Village Board will hold, we are holding a public hearing tonight regarding the resolution vacating a portion of River Lane located in the village of Alloway, Brown County. Is there anyone here who would like to discuss that? Brad, would you like to talk about it?
Craig is involved with
it. Craig, would you like to talk about it? I'm just going straight to you tonight.
Keep the microphone right here. Yeah. This is there's a map in your packet. This is a 25 foot wide parcel, 100 feet long, on River Lane, and it is a parcel we do not use. the adjacent property, we do not own that 25-foot width, so it's just a 25-foot roadway. This parcel, we propose to revert that parcel back to the property owner of this parcel adjacent to it so that that can be used. We do not have a future use for it. We do have a cul-de-sac, but it's in that area to the north of this, so we think it's a better use for this property to do that.
Okay. Thank you. No public comment? Hearing none, we will close the public hearing. Item 6, action regarding resolution 26-19, final resolution regarding the vacation of a portion of River Lane. Do I have a motion? We will be looking for a motion to approve, if you so choose, as presented, subject to the approval by the Planning Commission. Trustee Green.
So moved.
Seconded by Trustee Dennis. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
Just one question of how the land gets identified. I don't know if you can answer this or not, Craig, but will it have the same parcel number as the current owned property that we're, in a sense, annexing it to, or will it have a separate parcel number?
I'm not sure how they're doing that.
I hadn't thought of that question until just now, otherwise I would have asked earlier.
I'm not sure. I would think it becomes part of that parcel number, but I'm really not sure about that.
Okay. If it gets a separate parcel number, then technically there would be a different property tax bill and other identifying actions related to it, correct?
Yeah, there would be, yes, if it's a separate parcel. Okay. If it's added to the other parcel, then of course the acreage increases in the tax levy will reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what will happen. But there always will be a recorded survey,
mm-hmm.
because this is the recorded survey that will be at the courthouse.
I realize we've done, in the history of Ottawa, we have done this previously. I didn't know if anyone remembered how that part of it worked.
Yeah, I've done it too on some projects, and to be honest with you, I don't remember how.
Okay.
I believe they did assign it to the adjacent property.
Thank you.
Good question. Any other questions or discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. I hear it's going to be beautiful.
I think so. It's certainly in transition right now.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Old business, item number 7, reconsideration of request from the Historic Preservation Committee to fund the remaining balance for the nomination of the Miramar Drive Historic District, the Roger Minahan House, and the Herman and Lillian Grayling House to the National Register of Historic Places. Do I have a motion on this item?
I'd like to make a motion to reconsider the remaining balance at this time.
Okay. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. And in order for a reconsideration to take place, it needs to be brought up. It's been brought up, but we also have to have all of the trustees in attendance that were in attendance during the meeting when we made the vote. Mr. Genrich was at that meeting. He is not there here tonight. So it automatically gets tabled to our next meeting if and when everyone that was there at the meeting is there. So, we won't be discussing that tonight. Item number 8, action regarding continuing service agreement with Grafe for creating a concept design for the redevelopment of the Webster Avenue and St. Joseph Street intersection. Do I have a motion on this item? Next bit, sore. I'll make the motion. I will make a motion to approve the continuing service agreement with Grafe. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Trustee Dirk. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
I was hoping we could get, not subject to approval, but at some point down the road from Grafe, a little better understanding of their definition of reimbursable expenses.
Do we have a definition of that in our agreement with Grafe?
And not in this agreement. We certainly can. I emailed them this morning seeking clarification and have not heard back from them yet. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. It's an estimate of 16,513. Is that not to exceed? Is it a flat fixed bid? Is it time and materials? What kind of an agreement is it?
That's not to exceed for the expenses listed there.
Okay.
So we'll have two public meetings, and then the dialogue between them and the village and then the production of the material. That'll be that 16,513. Should the village wish for additional attendance by Grafe at meetings such as for 5 and 6, I think they quoted us out at $800 per meeting.
Okay, so that 16,513 really is a fixed bid for the services identified in this.
Correct.
I would suggest if that any paperwork say that, so that it's not a time and materials basis. Any other questions? And one other question. It doesn't include St. Joseph at all?
It does not in the scope. However, it does kind of lead us to that point of how we're going to address St. Joseph. It'll look at the intersection of St. Joseph and Webster. It'll kind of if you can explain that a little bit better.
How this interfaces with St. Joseph?
Yes. Since you're answering all the questions.
Bless you.
There's been quite a bit of discussion both here at board level and with Grafe about St. Joseph, the Arboretum Trail, and Webster Avenue, the commercial area. And Grafe was really focused more on the Arboretum Trail and St. Joseph. And the direction we're trying to go is to define what Webster Avenue would look like. I think there'll be some inclusion of St. Joseph and the Arboretum Trail into how Webster Avenue would look because it'll intersect there. I guess what Trevor was pointing out and what I would add to the explanation is when you have what you believe you want Webster Avenue to look like in its future development, at the point that you begin to proceed with that, then the Arboretum Trail and St. Joseph would be integrated into it. It would be part of that design. We already have options for what we think that trail could be, and it's more of an engineering thing than it is a landscape architecture thing because it's driven by the street itself and the limitations that we have to deal with, grade, street width, the hill, slope, and so forth. So this is really focused on give us a picture that you can decide on how you want Webster Avenue to look. The rest of it will fall into place, we believe, as that would move forward. That's probably the best way we can explain it. We'd rather focus on this than focus on the trail in St. Joseph because we can deal with a lot of that ourselves.
Okay. And in here it says to identify public gathering places, that sort of thing. I'm all for this project. My question is, are we going to be coming up with things that just aren't practical because people won't sell their property, or are we just dealing with the land as it is today?
We'll definitely want a plan that we can implement. That'll come to fruition through the interface we have, the staff and Greg, and through the step five, there's the preliminary concept, which is a chance for the board and the public to weigh in as well. Keep it open throughout the whole process to make sure that whatever we adopt is practical.
And will we be including the local businesses in any of the public meetings?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, cool. Great. Okay. I'm guessing no other questions. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion.
No.
Motion.
Nay.
You're a nay?
I'm a nay.
Okay. Motion passes.
One more thing. Was just to clarify, we said to proceed with using the funds out of the TIF.
That should be part of the motion?
Yeah.
And how we're funding it?
Okay.
I would agree to.
That's what I.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have to re-vote now?
I think it's understood.
Okay.
Agenda item number 9, adoption of ordinance 2016-14, Chapter 1, ordinance update, issuance of citations. I have a motion on this item.
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Green.
Messing with your neck.
Pardon?
Messing with your neck.
I'm getting exercise. This is simply the result of our discussion at our last meeting, where we are giving staff the tools they need to do their job and allowing them to, citations may be issued to property owners and or tenants in violation of the Village of Alloway ordinance. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Agenda item number 8, continuing service agreement. No. Let's go back to where we're supposed to be. Agenda item number 10, adoption of ordinance 2016-15, Chapter 7, ordinance update authority to identify residents. Do I have a motion on this agenda item? Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Green. This is once again giving our staff the tools they need, and having the code and safety enforcement coordinator has the authority to contact and identify persons of a residence during an ordinance violation. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Staff has tools. Agenda item number 11, 2015 management letter and annual financial report.
This was on the last agenda.
Yep.
We just didn't vote on it.
This was on the last agenda, and we did not vote to approve the letter. We were presented with the information, but traditionally the board approves.
Is it the approval or accept and place on file?
In the past, they've approved it.
Okay. I didn't know what the... wasn't sure what it was.
I think accepting would be...
Acceptable.
Well, do I have a motion on this matter? Trustee Dirt.
I'm going to motion to approve it.
Do I have a second? Trustee Dennis, seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. New business, number 13, action regarding Webster Bridge project and temporary signage.
You're out of line again.
Are you in a hurry tonight?
I'm in a hurry. Why don't we go to number 12? Stadium tax survey result and set date for public participation. Mr. Lane. Or Craig, would you like to do this?
What I wanted to do tonight is kind of walk through.
Sure, could you please?
Oh, sure. I just get an idea where we started. Just kind of give you an idea of what has been brought forth so far. This was a running list that went through committees and or staff or residents stopping by prior to doing the online survey. So I wanted to make sure that we include everything that has been brought up to date so that as a board you can digest, read, digest, and then set a public information meeting so that... You know, is the discussion or is the action going to take place or the decision going to take place in the next month, 2 months? We're not sure yet, but at least we want to engage the public as we move forward. So that's kind of what I wanted to do tonight is to kind of set the groundwork as far as the next step that we want to move forward with. But again, this is a running list that started earlier. We see New Eye on there, which was one of the items that's talked about during budget last year. This is something that has been going on since we received the actual check in December of last year. Excuse me. So it's something that we're not rushing into. We want to engage the public as much as possible along the way. But what I wanted to show that the those that are here tonight get an idea. The online survey took place virtually through the month of June. It's really, you might want to turn the volume down just a little bit. I think it's better now. All right. So basically through the month of June the survey was available, and it was also available for residents if they wanted to stop in and fill out a hard copy, and then that information was also included into that at the very end. But 839 response was extremely, extremely well. So 15%, right, Reverend? 15.8, Matthew, if you really want to get technical. But just to give you an idea, out of those that answered, of course, the no's, they got kicked out of the rest of the survey. They couldn't go ahead and answer any of the other questions. Once he said no, you're done. But move down here a little bit. And one of the other questions that we wanted to get an idea from is how long have you lived here? Because I think that's valuable information for us. And it's pretty impressive. The longest resident, how do I want to say that correctly? One of the surveys that was completed was by a resident of 66 years. But, when you look at the categories, the 0 to 5 all the way up to 31 plus, pretty good balance in there as far as who actually filled out the survey. What I can do, or you can do, we can get on and look at every individual survey. It doesn't direct it to an individual other than the person that filled it out, and we don't know who that is. But if you wanted to see someone in the category of 0 to 5 years, how were they answering those questions? Are they the ones that are looking at the park and rec end of things versus tax relief versus debt reduction? So you could break it down further and further and further, but it gives us a good indication as far as where our residents fall in that in category. This is pretty impressive. Those that had completed the survey and answered this particular question, 740 are homeowners. Again, that's a very important stat as well. You know, those are the ones that are. Not that we all didn't pay proper, didn't pay taxes, but those are maybe paying a little bit more. So, and here's how it broke out. On a scale of 0 to 10, where they fell, most likely or least likely to want to see the funds spent. There were several that indicated saving for a rainy day, and we want to honor that as well in the thought process. And with filling this survey out itself, it gave the opportunity for individuals to give specifics. So you'll see several pages. There's 330-some individual ideas. Granted, a lot of them fall within, is it a debt reduction or property tax relief or whatever, but it does fall within some of those. And it does. It kind of helps paint that picture a little bit better. And again, here's just as a percentage-wise, this is how people were viewing their priority. You see the biggest priority was property tax relief, because 5 was the most important. And I think it was, and here are all the 300, it says 324, but there's actually more because of the month that I had at the very end. But I wanted to make sure that everyone who did complete, their information is available for the board to review, and if anyone wants to come in and read it, they're more than welcome to. It is on our website as well. So with that being said, we want to make, if we're going to set up a time that we want to have further in-depth discussion on how we may feel it is best to utilize these funds, I think it would be important to give proper notice to the residents so that, again, we can get good turnout and good participation and have a candid discussion. So some of the ideas could be, you know, do you want to take the time to digest everything that you've got tonight, the 300-plus individual comments? If you want to come in and I can log you into the survey itself and try to break that out, I wish I could. I wish I had enough time to break out how the 0 to 5-year residents felt and etc. But it would take quite some time, and I don't know if I really have all that available. But certainly, if that's the choice or the direction of the board, we can certainly do so. But so if we decided to, if you looked at wanting to set up another meeting for further discussion, give yourself a month to digest. You're looking at the September 6th, which is the day after Labor Day, and I don't know if that causes any concerns for anybody. If we're holding a meeting right after a holiday, I don't. With school in session and such, I think more people are probably around that particular night anyway, but that would be my suggestion, would be either September 6th or wait till October 4th. So pretty soon we're going to get into the whole budget discussion, and some of these items do pay. Or will go hand in hand with the budget discussions, because if we're looking at debt reduction, how does that affect the budget or individual projects that may be identified that we want to move forward with? But again, I think engaging the public and giving them proper notice is the way we should move forward with it.
What about the idea of doing it twice in terms of giving two opportunities for the public to attend, one the second meeting in August and one the second meeting in September. You avoid the holiday. I don't know what other items might be happening around that time, but it still gives the residents two opportunities. We'd have a public meeting end of July, or as in tomorrow. We'd have another one, like I said, second meeting of August, second meeting of September. And it also gives us a little bit of time to read through it and digest any information for the budget.
I'm certainly not opposed to that by any stretch of the imagination. I do want to let you know I will be gone August 16th, and at this point I'm supposed to be out of the area on September 20th.
Good.
So I've kind of tried to work some of that into it as well.
Well, and I was wondering if we should just have the public input at both meetings in August. I don't know that there's a reason to wait in between necessarily. You won't be here for one of them.
But you'd be here for the first one talk through it, and then I think we can take it.
Correct. We can certainly do that. We'll just start making the notice
Any other thoughts on that?
We're going to wait until after tomorrow night's meeting to start making the notice, just to make sure we don't learn anything special tomorrow night.
Good point.
I don't see how it would change necessarily, but one extra day, I don't know if it'll make a difference.
Okay. How's that sound?
That sounds like a good plan.
So unless something strange happens tomorrow night, we'll plan on doing it the first 2 weeks, or for the two meetings in August. And then, when do we bring it up as a group? Second weekend, or second meeting in August?
First meeting in September.
We can do that. So you can gather all your thoughts? Okay.
There may be something new at that second meeting.
Okay. And you're gone when? In September? Okay, so the day after Labor Day you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any other questions about the process that we wanted to do is try to engage the public as much as possible. It was on multiple board agendas. We had a specific agenda item encouraging the residents to come and speak. Then we just did it every other meeting thereafter. Various committees had a chance to give input into what their thoughts are. And again, it's a community of money, and we're trying to do the best with it and satisfy the community as we can. So,
yeah, I found the numbers very interesting. It's pretty evenly split across. Mm-hmm. And if you added another one specifically to streets, that probably would have been a big one as well in the personal comments.
Yeah, you'll see that in the personal comments. There's a lot of streets.
Yep.
I went through and I would, tallying, okay, if it went streets, if it went parks, if it
streets,
went water,
parks.
Those were the top three.
Yeah,
there were 99 different comments I counted. I went through 99 different comments on either road repair or street repair.
Yep.
So 30%.
It's really kind of giving us a direction.
Well, the thing is, if it's used there, that's for everybody's use, and it's less money that we have to either tap out of the general fund or borrow, so everybody benefits.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mr. Lyon.
I have a question. There was one line in there, and I don't recall it specifically, but it was about someone complaining about East Lawn Park is behind them, and they've got baseball supplying into their yard. Is that something we could just take care of separately as part of our parks things, like putting up netting like we do for golf courses? And I don't know anything about the site. I've never been there. I just saw it when I was looking through there.
There has been, in the 21 years that I've been here, netting put up on the baseline, netting behind the home plate, additional netting put behind home plate. I don't think there was a fourth. And I think Chris has been in discussion and inquiring.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I don't know anything about the specifics. I just saw that.
Well, and at one point, I think we even put a bigger fence up behind there trying to catch those.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's still happening. Do we have any numbers on how much?
Wrong ball, wrong bat. Don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
No, I really don't. There's not a lot of games that are played there. It's more practice than anything.
Yeah.
In a game scenario, is probably less likely than in practice.
I just didn't know if it was 20 a week or two a year.
I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Greg, you're supposed to answer that.
In the year and a half that I've been here, number of balls have been probably less than a dozen. And that was in one individual's yard out of, I don't know how many neighbors we have next to the park there. And is it something we can look to do outside of this money? Yes, definitely.
Good.
And I don't recall the little girl's name. I would be remiss if I didn't say this, but her suggestion was free ice cream for everybody in Holloway. I cannot remember her name. I will look it up. I promised her that I would make sure that I mentioned that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Item number 13, Webster Bridge Project and temporary signage on Derby Lane. Can we get some lights, please? Thank you. Trevor?
All right. As you probably are well aware, the Webster Bridge is now closed, and the traffic is being diverted. The signed detour takes you from Webster down Alloway Avenue to Riverside Drive up to Mason. So that bypasses quite a few businesses along that route. It was our understanding up until last week that because this was a DOT project, the DOT would be handling the businesses and how they could direct the traffic to those businesses that are missing the daily traffic. However, came apparent last week that that's not the case because this is a smaller project for them. So now we're seeking approval from the board to allow businesses to put signs in the right of way. I think initially we want to just start out with a few yard signs and have businesses place them where they see best fit. I only say that because we've only received inquiries from two different businesses, one Quick Trip, one Traders. I think if it becomes more than that, we start receiving complaints of it's just looking bad. There are a few locations that we can put these, one like master billboard sign where these businesses can put their detour signs. And I highlighted those locations in your agenda. One being St. Francis Park on Riverside Drive. You notice there's already a sign there with different club signs, Lions, Optimist, and Rotary, I think. And we have a location on Riverside Drive in Derby. We actually own a small parcel there. And then also on in Optimist Park on the corner there would be the locations I would be thinking of. I'd like the board to approve staff to use their discretion if that became the case, if the yard signs became an issue.
Okay, so you're asking for the board to approve the placement of temporary signage by businesses in accordance with our sign code.
Correct, yes. So it would be in the right way, which is only allowed by both.
Okay.
And we'd be telling them the locations that are permitted.
Right now, I was going to just kind of leave it up because it's only been the two businesses
okay. That
have come forward. But if it became an issue, we would like to kind of concentrate more on the one larger billboard site.
Okay. Do I have a motion on that? Trustee Green.
I was just going to say, I'll make the motion too. I live in the zone, and Traders are already up, which is good, yeah. So people know how to get to them. So I would move to approve for these businesses affected by the bridge outage. And in addition, if it does become cluttered, the staff can use their discretion at placing signs so we can consolidate them.
I would second that.
Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
Would the community center property also be an option, or is that too far away?
That could be an option. That's just north of Valley.
Throwing that out there.
Mm-hmm. How about anything on Libel?
Optimist Park is the one that comes to mind. That's just south of the bridge. So that would take care of the bridge. The business is south. North, we'd have to do some thinking. We could stick it in between the. We would really have to think about that location, only because we'd want to be cautious to keep clear of the side triangle and make sure everyone's still safe at the same time.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 14, Adoption of Ordinance 2016-16, amending Section 23-10 of Chapter 23, Regulation of Fermented Malt Beverages and Intoxicating Liquors, relating to the outdoor fencing and or gates used to cordon off an exterior patio area. Do I have a motion on this item? It's basically adding all outdoor fences and or gates used to cordon off an exterior patio area of bar or restaurant and will be located in the path of egress must meet all current building and fire code egress exit path requirements, as requested by the fire department. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Atwood.
Motion to approve.
Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion?
Yeah, what kind of started this, just out of curiosity? Did we have an issue, or is this just something that got on somebody's radar?
It was discussed at last meeting.
Yeah.
There was a request from Pallet and Pub to put that one, and because you need a certain egress, whatever, and it's not spelled out in our liquor section.
And theirs didn't need it.
Right.
Okay.
And so they just wanted it put in our liquor section so that it was more...
goes in both.
So we see it.
Because I know we address Pub and Pallet. So just out of curiosity, what would make Pub and Pallet need this? That's right.
I don't know their specifics. I just don't think they had enough room.
To put it up?
Right.
So that takes away their outside seating area?
Either that or you don't require a fence.
And we said something in reference also to how far it extended out into the parking area equivalent to Zesty's. We talked about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a comparable, that it is a precedent that had already been set as to how far out they had already.
Because Zesty's goes out pretty far.
Now, they have a cement pad there, but at the same time, I think that's what we're kind of talking about at the time.
And the second one is the one down by the trail that is really a deck, and it doesn't connect. You just, there's a few steps in between.
Yeah. And no fence.
No fence.
Okay.
So if you decide to bring back the Pallet and Pub for further discussion on different options for that. That's an
or they can come to us, right?
Yes.
Okay, any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 15, action regarding Public Works Committee recommendation from July 13th, 2016. Regarding proposed county ordinance 6.14 regarding county road construction. I will make a motion to approve the letter. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. Any discussion? Mr. Burnt, would you fill us in, please?
This is a very complex issue. It's receiving a lot of attention. I would point out that our Brown County Supervisor Joan Brusky is here this evening. We did meet with her earlier today to talk about this as well. The bottom line of this is it's really the beginning of Brown County developing an ordinance to better define the scope and cost that they would participate in with the municipality when the county highway is within the municipality. There is a process right now, an agreement that's been used. We used it for the Huffman Road project, but the county is beginning the process of looking at making it a county ordinance and better defining the relationship between the municipality and the county on the project. There's going to be a lot of input. There's been a lot of discussion between the public works directors and the administrators. This letter represents some comments that we have, and I'm sure other communities have other comments. I have obtained information from other communities, and they're pointing out some other things. basically what this letter is saying, and this is intended to be presented next Monday, the planning, development, and whatever the committee is called, is making time available on Monday at their committee meeting for the municipalities to speak and present their comments. Basically, what we're saying in this letter is, number one, whatever is done, it should be a joint agreement between the municipalities and the county. We need to sit down and iron this out. It can't be one-sided. It's just not going to work if it's one-sided. The second key point is, I don't believe that the Wisconsin Statute 83.05 is necessarily being interpreted properly in what the county is proposing. But that's not something that we should look at. That should be our legal counsel. So the legal counsel for the various parties should discuss this and come to an opinion or an agreement or a disagreement on what that ordinance really, what the state statute really means, because that's the driver. And then as we look at it, section 3, 4, and 5, or paragraphs 3, 4, and 5, those are some things that are in what the county is proposing that really everybody needs to understand what those really mean. When the statute says authority to the municipality, well, what does that mean? The way I would interpret it is we would make the decision on what project we want to do. We would retain the design consultant, we would bid the project, and we would construct it. However, that has ramifications for the county in terms of how the project is done and the cost allocations. So it's important to recognize what that really means and agree on what that means. Who would be responsible for what? And then there's the stormwater issue. The county is looking at stormwater as being an expense that they should not incur. Our position is you incur that in all your projects. You should be sharing in stormwater costs within the municipality. You incur those costs out in the railroad. What's the difference? So these are just some comments that we see. There will be comments by the other communities. I think the net result will be some sort of a working meeting or a series of meetings to develop whatever that ordinance looks like and so that the municipalities have input. So I think this will come back. This is just the initial, let's put some concerns on the table and make sure that people are aware that this is maybe a bigger issue than what they thought. And let's go from there and figure out how to make this a workable approach. And I know that that's how at least a couple of the other communities are looking at it. Let's sit down and let's work this out as a group.
And one of the issues is pushing more money, pushing more costs down to the local municipality.
Yeah.
And in an effort to save money, right, at the county level, I'm guessing. And that's not saving money,
that's just
reallocating.
Well, it's important in this, in whatever we do, one of the things that needs to be preserved is the ability to sit down and negotiate an agreement. We did that on Hoffman Road. There were things the county didn't want to do. We were able to negotiate to a reasonable position that was fair to both parties. We need to make sure that we still have that approach. It's not in the draft ordinance. We want to make sure that gets put in there. It's just important to keep this a good working relationship.
What time is that meeting on Monday?
6:15. And it's at the County Extension Office over on Bellevue Street. I would plan on attending, and if this letter is agreeable to the board, we would sign this and present this letter, and this would be the comments that we offer for their consideration. And you're certainly welcome to attend, or you're welcome to present it if you'd like. That's fine with me, and I'll back you up.
You're doing such a great job. Any questions?
Would we be sending this letter prior to the meeting or presenting it at the meeting?
I would think presented at the meeting. Because they specifically are asking for municipalities, offering municipalities the opportunity to attend and speak. So I think that's what we would say.
Okay. I wasn't sure because when I went through the Planning Commission minutes, I noticed the note that was sent on July 6th ends with, please feel free to email me any comments that you have prior to the PD&T meeting in July.
Okay.
So I could be that we do both. We send it so that they have it ahead of time, and there's no chance of it not meeting a deadline, so to speak, as well as present, and whenever there's a chance to make a public comment, we can do so.
And are there any other suggestions from board members on the content of the letter? I thought it was well articulated. Thank you, Joan, for being here and for representing us next week.
I think it's important that we do what Craig said, primarily because as you look at this, I'm just reading State Legislature 83.05, and one of the lines within that statute says that you have to have evidence that the applicant is our function. It has to have 60 days of projected operating funds in reserve for any project. Well, that's a hefty amount of cash if there's a big program. I mean, that's so that therein is the point where Craig said, you know, let's make sure that we talk about this and it continues to provide the ability to piece out those things which each side can do better than another. So I think this is a good, solid letter to send it.
Okay, so the motion on the table is to approve the letter as proposed, and it's seconded. Trustee, do you have a question? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 16, open government. Now, something's been bothering me for a while, and I've been trying to figure out how to deal with it, and so I just put it on the agenda. We've received a lot of emails and a lot of comments from some folks saying that or suggesting that the board doesn't act in an open fashion. We don't conduct the public business in the public forum, and that bothers me. It bothers me because this village board, in my opinion, does an excellent job of making sure we follow the rules of the Wisconsin state law of open meetings. Our village staff works very hard to answer any questions and serve our public. So in the spirit of open government, I thought we'd talk about it in open government, in an open meeting. We've been accused of conducting special deals behind closed doors, closed-door meetings, and cutting special deals in backdoor meetings, and we don't. The village board is allowed to conduct closed-door meetings to the public when we're dealing with personnel issues. Well, for two reasons. Partly two reasons. One is when we're dealing with personnel issues, or when we're negotiating the sale of a property, a public property, and we've been working hard to deal with some. We have quite a few properties in the village domain that we'd like to get onto the tax roll, and we're working hard to do that. So, but we don't take any action in closed session. We discuss things in closed session. Then we come into public session, open session, and we discuss those things in open session and vote on those in open session with public input. As an elected official, I receive emails, letters, phone calls every now and then from residents either giving me input on something, asking for help, or asking for clarification on something. And I like that. The challenge is we have one resident who uses our email system as the means for communicating and does it often. And I don't think he'd mind me using his name because many of those are open records requests. And that's Mr. O'Rourke. Mr. O'Rourke's an involved citizen in the village of Alloway. The thing is that
I asked for a quick tally of emails, how many emails we've received this year. And without two trustees being able to respond in time, we've had 681 emails since January regarding issues in the village for Mr. O'Rourke. I've received 152. 70% of those have been open records requests, which we are by law obligated to answer. And many of those open records requests are the same time and time again. So the reason for this discussion is to say this is the place to conduct public business. And I invite anyone who has an issue with how we run our government to bring it forth into a public forum. But this is the place to discuss it. For that reason, I will not be conducting any debates or going back and forth and getting pulled into conversations via email, because that's not conducting the public business in the public forum. It's in a private forum between two parties. And I don't believe in that. So I'm going to practice that. I would encourage staff and the other village trustees to adopt that. It's not illegal. We are here, and we are here to listen. We are here to work. But we're going to do it in an open forum. So I respectfully request, for many reasons, that we use open records requests for appropriate requests. We use those requests. We don't issue multiple requests, multiple versions of the same request for the same information. When we get an open records request, we answer it to the best of our ability. We can't create documents for open records requests. We can't force other parties to provide records that don't exist. So that's what I wanted to bring up. I'm all in favor of open government. I love resident participation. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's meeting to talk about things. And I wish we could get more people at these meetings for that. But that's what I wanted to bring up. And any other discussion? Does anyone else want to say anything? And you don't have to, but...
I don't think there's anybody on the board who can't be approached by someone, and if you want to discuss something, or if you want to chew on our ear or hold our feet to the fire or anything, I think there's a pretty good board for that. Yeah. I think that we're all very open to the concept of questions, thoughts, comments. And as President Raptor said, those closed sessions are specifically because there is sensitive material that's being discussed only from the standpoint that we legally are obliged to do it. Believe me, they're boring meetings. And we just get the work done. And that's all we're doing. And there's really no reason for anyone to be paranoid or worry about it. There's no executive committee doing secret actions. And I think we've been fairly open and fairly straight-faced about all this. And I don't think there's really a cause for anyone to be concerned or worried. And if there is, they should come. This judge, the President Raptor said, come before us and say it out in the open. Tell us exactly what you're thinking. And if we realize we're doing something wrong, we'll correct it. We've done that in the past. I guess that's my two cents.
Anything else from anyone?
I would just point out that I applaud you for bringing this up. And I think it's the appropriate way of handling it. And I think moving forward, this is the way we need to conduct ourselves.
Anything else? If there's no opposition on the board, I will suspend the rules and invite public to say anything. Any issue?
No issue.
Got the rules?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I did send FYIs. When I do send a open records request, I did notice that they were being edited and then forwarded to the board. So when I do send an open records request, I do send a copy of them to the board members simply as an FYI. In November of 2012, I was on a committee. I was helped select a particular contractor to do work for the village. that contractor, as it has now been identified, was paid in excess of what's allowed under federal law. The village is the one that actually broke the law in paying that contractor. It's not the contractor's fault. They can ask whatever they want. And that violation of federal law and federal guidelines is going on, has been going on since I detected it, and since the problem with that intensive survey happened in November of 2012. The problem with the overpayment in violation of the federal law is going on today and was up for reconsideration at tonight's meeting. And I consider it just another example of the executive committee. Yes, the executive committee does exist. I met with them. Attorney Dennis was on it. The village president was on it. The previous administrator was on it. There is no record of it. I ask that a record be kept of that meeting because of the concerns I had. And there is no record of those meetings. So I did notice that the village minutes are simply a summary. They're not intended to be verbatim. And that comments are filtered through the person taking the minutes. And that if something needs to be said in a particular manner, they need to be put in writing, submitted, and allow my board members to review those comments at their leisure, not as somebody else's summary of what they think that they heard at a particular meeting. So, in conclusion, I believe that the State Historic Preservation Office has violated federal guidelines. I believe the village has violated federal guidelines for payment of contractors. We're in the middle of a contract that was initiated in 2012, and that contract goes on. And we are now reaping fruits of bad government because we cannot find any contractors that are willing to accept full federal rates to do pretty simple historic preservation work in the village. Only one contractor is now bidding on our contract. And I don't know why that is, but the village is now offering to pay $110 an hour for pretty simple work, for editing a document. We were paying $40, $60, $90 an hour for somebody to drive around and look at cars and snap pictures of buildings. It was the dumbest thing I ever saw. But this board has created the situation in which complaints were brought in-house into secret meetings. I was raked over the coals, and the truth never came out. So that is why I use the open records request, make sure that what I tell the board is what is actually going on, and that it's not having to be filtered through and summarized through somebody else's notes. So, again, I believe that the village is violating federal law as of today, and the State Historic Preservation Office has done it on a repeated basis since November of 2012. And that's my complaint, and I'm more than willing to talk with you. I requested to meet with you in closed session on numerous times, and it was never allowed. I requested to meet with the full board in closed session to talk about this. I was warned by the village attorney that any of my conversations with him were subject to review by everybody, and I was never allowed to meet with the entire board in closed session. So that's why you each individually get copies of my open request letters that go to Debbie.
Jim, hold on a second, if you don't mind.
What is it?
first of all, the open, your request for a closed meeting, under what part of the law would we be able to have such a meeting?
A meeting that would tarnish someone's reputation and expose me to allegations of slander would create a situation where we could legally meet in closed session to discuss behavior of village employees and of the contracts, where I could speak candidly and openly without fear of legal retaliation. Another contractor has showed up here making all sorts of saber rattling, and I'm aware of it. And so that's why I put things in writing, so that it's there for everybody to see. And so there is no he said, she said. If I said it, I said it. And I put it in writing. And that's unlike the village board and the village attorney, who conceal everything. And they don't put it out there.
Okay. On that topic, regarding not documenting everything in notes, such as our summaries, those are summaries.
Right. They're not intended to be verbatim.
Right.
I knew that.
Right. Right here is the verbatim. So everything we say,
no,
right,
no,
is on
no. It was this is not accessible. An audio is not accessible. There's hundreds and hundreds of hours, and it's not accessible. If somebody wants to verify what was said, they can go ahead and verify what was said, but it doesn't make it into the public record. Only what Debbie types in makes it into the public record, and it can be misleading. The attacks on me were detailed by the previous administration, were put into the record in great detail, whereas in my complaints about the way the village was run were glossed over. And that's, I've read Robert's Rules of Order, and I've read all the rules, and the village is entitled to run them the way that, publish the minutes the way that they need to be published. And that is simply that votes have to be recorded. After that, it's up to the discretion of the person taking the notes. Just the votes have to be recorded. That's it.
Well, and your concerns are your concerns. And that's why I invite you to bring them before the board in the public forum, so that we can deal with those.
Well, these were things that I was being threatened with litigation if I spoke in public about it. And I spoke with the village attorney, and he said that all of his records, all of my conversations with him, were open to public records, and that I ought to be very, very careful. So,
my last comment on the issue regarding the historic surveys.
Yes.
We, as a board, I think we were all here at the time. We as a board voted last March that we were satisfied with the results of that, and we weren't going to...
Yeah, I'm
further
familiar. I've been through this before.
So
with my, you.
I'm just asking. I'm asking not to continue to bring it up because we voted on it.
No. Okay? You're violating the federal law, and you need to be held accountable. The previous administration got up here and stamped his feet and started telling me that, instead of telling the whole village, that I needed to be held accountable. And the people that need to be held accountable are the people who are legally accountable to the taxpayers of the village and to the state and to the federal government, who is providing the funding for your surveys.
I've asked staff about how we're violating the law. And they can't find anything. So if
that's okay.
So can you provide it to me?
Yes, I sent you in the open records request. I sent you the letter from Jim Drager outlining what the maximum allowable rate under federal law was. So you have that in the open records request. So you have that.
I don't recall, but I'll look for that.
Yeah, you haven't. Trevor hasn't.
So from Jim Drager.
Yeah, from Jim Drager,
state of Wisconsin.
He's the State Historic Preservation Office officer for the State Historic Preservation Office. He is the top guy in the state.
So he is saying by law we cannot pay more than $90 an hour for any intensive survey.
If you want, you can pay whatever you want. Okay. You're not allowed to bill the government, the federal government, more than their stated federal rate.
And you did.
He did.
And you're planning to do it again. And I think that, my understanding, I don't believe that the village attorney, when he tells you that it's a flat rate fee, and that's not time and materials, these are time and material contracts not to exceed. They're not flat rate fees. They're time and material fee contracts not to exceed. Work was done on those contracts that shouldn't have been done, and they ran out of money, and we got a crappy survey. We got a survey that was shoddy. There were 2,500 properties they were supposed to at least look at. They promised to evaluate, do surveys on 1,500 of them. They did 780. And so, you know, they ran out of money, and they're entitled to, I'm not complaining against that contractor. It was the village that didn't supervise it properly. And that administration is now gone, and now it's time for a new group of people to evaluate our policies.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else have anything on that?
Trustee Harris.
I'd just like to make one quick comment regarding the taking of minutes. And any meeting that I've attended where I've read through the minutes afterwards, I think they've accurately reflected the proceedings, and I just want to make sure that I've not run into an issue where I've attended a meeting, read through the minutes, I've never run into an issue in the 2.5 years I've been on the board.
Thank you.
I would second that and also say that when someone wants to come to the village and request audio information and listen to or review it, that has been available to them at any and all times, and that the service has been professional and forthright and courteous as well as patient.
Okay, thank you. We're still suspended.
In the committees, in the historic preservation committees, those minutes are supposed to go to the state. Those were the ones that were most heavily edited and not fairly put in. I came before the board complaining, and the action that the board took was, instead of approving the minutes, a decision was made to accept and place in file. So, because of that complaint. So, people read the minutes of a meeting, and they think that they know what went on. And it's easy to, there's a filtering process that goes through. Anybody who takes notes on a meeting, they don't get it all right. They don't, and it's impossible to expect somebody, even if they're doing their darndest to do a fair job. Some people are much better than others at taking notes on meetings. And so, by you reading some of the minutes on some of those meetings, you just didn't get what was actually said. And particularly at the historic preservation meeting, I've shortened what I say. I try and keep it to about 3 or 4 sentences when I want it to go into the record accurately. I try not to speak too long, because the longer I speak, the less accurate the entry becomes. So I try and keep it short. As you notice, I usually speak in maybe 3 or 4 sentences, and then I'm done. And then it's in the record, and if somebody has questions, they can talk to me. Okay. That's why I speak shortly.
And you read the minutes, obviously.
Sure.
I would invite you, once again.
I'm not allowed to. I'm not allowed to edit and
no,
tell the committees how to change those minutes. And you don't want. I tried it at one meeting, and it started going way too long. So you. The minutes are the minutes, and unless they're done improperly, which means they're only required to record who was in attendance and what votes were taken. That's mm-hmm. that's all that's required. Other than that, it's up to whoever taking the minutes.
Right. I was going to say that I've seen you come to village board meetings saying, don't approve those minutes because they're inaccurate.
Right.
And I invite you to do that if you find something to be inaccurate.
The fact that it didn't include all of the statements that I made is not a reason not to approve the minutes. So I have objected to minutes. I have said that there were things missing, and I was said thank you very much and pushed the aside. And so that's why I write things down, so that my elected representatives understand exactly what it is that I'm talking about. They don't have to read. When I say FYI and I send you something that's FYI, you don't have to read it all. You know, you can just go in the circular file or your delete button.
But I would request you save me that process and just not FYI me on things, unless you mean nonsense.
No, I do want you to read it, but I'm not holding you accountable. The only people that are accountable, I've told, is to send everything to Debbie, and then everything else, instead of just sending a CC to everybody, I send one to each individual person so that they know. And that's how you take.
That's how we get 1,000 emails.
That's how you get 1,000 emails. Okay. But you know what? I send it to each individual person so I know that they received it. Because everyone's important. You're important. I bring it up because Bob suggested that he didn't like it and that I should be taken behind the courthouse and shot like a dog. Very funny. It was on the record.
I think your filter is off there, Jim.
Yeah. So I heard I heard it. Okay. It was in the record.
It was in the record. Then you have misinterpreted what we're saying.
Well, if you would listen for one moment,
folks, I am trying to tell you that you can come before this board any time. And if there's any information which is found to be in your historical meetings which are inaccurate, you can come to us and tell us this is inaccurate and give us case in point, by point, the specific items that are wrong, incorrect, in error, or needing to be corrected. And we will accept them. But if you cannot bring those to us and give us specific things to which you are objecting, then what you are giving us is just felonious information which is unnecessary.
I think you're wrong.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke.
And the number is the original billing at the federal rate by the contractor that the city paid out was $90 an hour, and now in the current contract it's $110 an hour. It's not my job to tell you how to supervise contracts, but you need to do a better job of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Agenda item number 17, recodification.
Does it recognize we'll be taking up the rules again?
Thank you. We are taking up the rules. Go ahead and call him our Sergeant of Arms. You do a good job, man.
We did receive notice on July 12th, from the company that's working on the recodification, that this week we should be receiving the rough draft. So once we receive that, we'll be going through page by page, making sure that it's accurate, and engage the building board in all those discussions. And eventually, the entire ordinance recodification aspect will need to be brought to the board for final approval. A lot of work to be done yet, but we're getting closer.
Any questions for Brad? Thank you, sir. Update on the sign code, Trevor.
All right, so this was something that we started last fall. Primarily from a response from business owners just saying that they would like additional space, square footage for their signs because they were in multi-tenant buildings and they're limited to that 32 square feet to share that among all the tenants in the building. So we started amending that process, and as you can tell, it kind of got pretty extensive. So here we are, almost a year later, and we're looking at adopting it. We have had the Planning Commission and Economic Development Committee review the ordinance. They're both okay with it. Our village attorney has looked it over. He's made his comments. And our biggest hang-up so far was getting a site survey done, which is required, which is pretty much going around the village and taking a picture of every sign in the village. It's time-consuming. But we did get that done last week and 2 weeks ago, so we are able to move forward with adopting it. If you like, I can go page by page through here, give you the highlights and get questions afterwards. But ultimately, today I'll be looking for the board to schedule a public hearing so we can adopt this and move forward.
Okay, so the question before the board is to approve a public hearing. Do I have a motion on that? Oh, it's not.
Discussion.
That's right. Okay, thanks. Shame on you.
So if the board wishes, I can go through it.
Yeah, could you give us the highlights?
I just want to say, Chair, there looks like there's a lot of red in here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know, as we discussed it at Economic Development and Plan Commission, there really isn't that many major changes. But when you look at this document with all the red, it appears to be. So I think we do need to go through it a bit. Because
yeah, sure.
It really isn't that changed much, is it?
Right. You're right. So the pages that I left out of the entire your packet are really the definition pages. I just felt like those 8 pages were the definitions that save some trees there. So on the first page, you'll see currently we don't have a variance process. There are certain circumstances where the letter of the law isn't always practical, and the Economic Development Committee requested that a variance-like process be allowed to be in here. So we did include that in this language. This process is much like what you guys went through a few weeks ago when you approved the siding for those buildings.
If I can just speak on behalf of economic development on that. And I didn't read this really thoroughly to see how that variance is in there, or the variance process is in there. But I know that we wanted to make it not an easy process, that there would be more steps so that they wouldn't come to the board level without being handled somewhere else first, so it would make some sense. Because, as I recall, several years ago, we were having a lot of requests that didn't really fit with the sign code. And at that time, we did some changes to the sign code, and we said no variances. And it's been very peaceful. But there is special situations where a variance may be necessary, and there should be some process in place for that. Thank
right.
And so I just have a question going on to that. I just want to make sure we don't get into the situation we were in before when we took the variance process out. So how is this different, and how has this been narrowed down so we don't get a gazillion requests just for convenience, which is what it was before?
Right. I want to say this, the language we're adopting is from the tier. I'm not exactly sure. We took a lot of language from a lot of different municipalities, what we thought worked best. And I can't speak on what was present before, but this does, like Penny was mentioning, this does send them through the Planning Commission and have them review it. And there are certain standards that they have to meet for the exceptions. And I'm not sure if that was in there in the past, but in my opinion...
No, I think they came right to the board.
Yeah, in my opinion, this makes it a little bit more challenging to apply for that exception.
And they can only apply for an exemption if it just completely doesn't fit.
Correct.
Not just for convenience.
Right. Right.
Okay. Because there are site situations where I can understand it be needed, but the convenience factor was a huge issue prior.
Moving forward a few pages. The next big one was to allow sponsorship sites in parks, along ball fields, and for big events. To allow the Parks Department to approve those signs seasonally, for the board to approve the locations of the signs. So, say the board wanted to approve signs on a certain baseball field, that would kind of extend indefinitely, and then it would be up to the Parks Department to make the determination. Just kind of streamlining the process and allowing it to be less cumbersome and coming to the board every time. To seek approval.
Couldn't we just give the Parks Committee the approval to do that as they see fit, or no?
You could.
Or is it?
It's off-site advertising. So okay. It would be like what we were doing tonight, and Chris and I were talking, and I think it's just a cleaner, more transparent process.
Okay, good. Transparent, I like that.
9 out of 10 5. That was... anyway.
Don't even go there.
So then the LED Message meeting. Center. What you're seeing in a lot of municipalities is moving towards limiting the amount of total square footage that can make up the, or that can be made up of the LED Message Center. I think in the past it was cost prohibitive to have 32 square feet of an LED Message Center, but as costs have come down, and they're still pretty expensive, but it becomes more of an option. And so a lot of municipalities are adopting anywhere from 30% to 50% of the sign being allowed to be an LED Message Center. And it just kind of limits the space, still allows the business to kind of use that tool, but it's not as bright, and it kind of preserves that residential character that we have currently in the village. And I think it's a pretty good compromise. Another thing was the timing of the LED Message Centers. I think when the code was originally adopted, it was once a day it could change, and then that moved down to every 15 minutes on the quarter hour. So these businesses are paying high dollars for these signs that they can change not barely frequently. However, they're not utilizing to the best of their abilities. Not only that, it also becomes a challenge to enforce these. Drive up and down Webster, I don't want to call out any one business, but you'll see a lot of businesses that don't follow the every 15 minutes on the quarter hour. So it just becomes very complicated and difficult to enforce.
So what's your recommendation?
So our recommendation is to the businesses on commercial stretches to move down to every 3 seconds. The original recommendation was 10 seconds, however, from the Commission and Economic Development Committee, about 3 seconds was better.
So you wouldn't have any rolling signs?
Correct. You still wouldn't have any flashing rolling. It would just change. But only every 3 seconds.
So it's essentially flashing every 3 seconds.
Correct.
It could.
But I think when the code was adopted, I think these signs were relatively new, and so any change was a lot, was noticeable. But I think if you drive on Webster, you'll notice a lot of businesses are doing these 3 seconds, and you don't even notice it.
I heard we didn't want it to be like Las Vegas.
Right.
I don't recall that.
That's what some businesses told me, too.
That's what some residents have said, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, not even Las Vegas. They don't want it to be a Schwabenon.
That one I heard.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed it.
So then we moved forward, and there were some recommended changes for real estate signs. Thumbing a few pages forward beyond that to existing signs, subsection J. This was done because currently our non-conforming policy states, or is stated in such a way that if you change everything about the sign, as long as you keep it in the exact location, the size and shape, so you can replace all the framing, everything like that, you can keep the sign. So what we did was we took language that's already utilized in another part of our ordinances for buildings. So the lifetime cost of repair, maintenance and alterations, either structural or cosmetic, exceeds 50% of the sign, and you have to conform with the current policy. Our current policy, there's some statistics on it, because there are other sign codes with our policy. And it was pretty interesting. It said you'll have a 90% turnover in 40 years. It will take 40 years in order for 90% of the signs in the village to be conforming, which is a pretty long time. Ours isn't as aggressive as other municipalities have, but it does, I think, make it more realistic. And then I also mentioned in the notes there that you always have the facade improvement program people can apply for if it is a burden on the business owner. But again, if you're already spending 50% or more of what the sign is worth, you might as well just bring your sign up performance. Moving forward, wall signs. Subsection 3, A2. So currently we don't allow a wall sign for trails. And throughout this process, we had two companies approach us asking if they could put signs advertising on the trail, which I thought would be a neat use. And certainly up to that business's discretion if they want to. However, we don't want a lot of signs appearing. We want to preserve the character of the trail, so we work with Brown County and the DNR to come up with what you see here. There'll be non-illuminated signs, and there's a size restriction, and if you abut a trail, for instance, on Riverside Drive, if you're a business that has a frontage on the Fox River Trail, frontage on Riverside Drive, two signs, you can't see that. You have two signs as long as you can't see both of them at the same time. Essentially, how it works. Monument signs and freestanding signs. Again, we allow for a trail sign. A non-illuminated trail sign because you're not on the trails after dark anymore. We adjusted the height requirement slightly because this is really what started everything, was trying to adjust the area requirements for monument signs for multi-tenant buildings. So we inserted this table here, and as you can see, as your square footage or as your tenants increase, your allowable square footage for signs increase, and then as your area increases, your height increases slightly, and that's just so that you don't have really tall, odd-shaped signs. And you'll notice in that table, the trail sign is really 5.5 feet as well. So that's, I mean, you really don't need anything taller than that because all your trail traffic is biker, pedestrian driven, and it's kind of that high level almost. It was brought up at the planning commission that monument signs should have addresses on them so that they're easier to locate for people that are from out of town. And then this was item number 8 was something that we inserted as a suggestion from the border study, was having the base match the base of a monument center match the architectural material from the building. Just kind of draw everything together. Let's see. Apologize. It's been a few months since I went over this. I was going over it this afternoon. We do have the option for signs to go through the PDD process to kind of allow some flexibility within the sign code. However, that sign has to be part of the overall development package. They can't just apply for the PDD to get a variance on the sign. And then we, this was something that we brought up. It was brought up with QuickTrip. And I didn't realize because I'm not in this industry, but the lighting or the lumens that we were requiring, the measurement we were using is not a measure of light, it's a measure of power, so it's very hard to create a sign that you're measuring power when you're really looking after the amount of light that's thrown off that side. So we adjusted that in here. And that's really the gist of it.
What did you do with real estate signs?
Real estate signs, I think we adjusted it so that we changed the size requirements.
You made it smaller, didn't you?
And I apologize. I'm noticing now that's not in red, so it's in green. So residential sign, you're allowed 6 non-illuminated square feet, as opposed to 8. Non-residential, you're allowed 16 non-illuminated square feet versus 32, and then open land, so it's something like the condo project across the street, you're allowed 32 square feet with limited floodlight. And we actually have had a realtor go through this, and they said that's not unreasonable at all. That's actually what is the industry standard almost.
Okay. Any questions for Trevor? Yes.
Actually, I do have one question under existing signs, because we had talked about the sprayer sign when they modified that some time back. That sign's been here forever. If anything, it could be considered a historic sign. So one of the things I just want to make sure is, you know, if they're willing to repair that type of sign, that kind of, use the word iconic, but it almost is. I mean, Schrader family and that greenhouse has been here forever. That sign's been here a long time. That if they're willing to do this for those type of signs, 50% may not apply. So it's just a thought to think about. They're the only ones I can actually think of that would be considered that way. And the only reason I even think of them was it was brought up when they changed out the bottom part where you used to use the stick and put the letters in, whatever you call that, the LED portion, is we let them keep that in their big aerial sign. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know if there's a way to included, and that's the only one I can think of, but there may be others in the village that are those type of signs that we may actually not want to apply to.
So you're talking about adding additional language maybe in the exceptions portion?
I really hate exceptions and variances, but I don't know if there's some way to say if they're over X amount of years old, or I don't know, it's just something to think about for language with that one, because I would just hate to see us lose some of those type of signs.
Okay.
If the owners are willing to replace them and keep them maintained.
But they can ask for a variance, right?
Oh, God, I hate that word. I really do. The biggest mess when we did this before. So, I mean, that's my only caveat to going down this path.
But we allow for it, right, in this sense?
Yes, but it goes to plan commission first, and there's got to be a good reason.
Yeah.
Not just because the other person.
I can chill you tonight. I can email you and.
Please do, because we may want to ask that even the historical commission and the historic alloy society. I mean, that's literally the only one I can think of, but I also don't want to miss any others out there, because we may actually want to just have a very specific listing so we don't get into this variant stuff with that type of thing. I mean, any way we can minimize that mess after experiencing it before would be great.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Yep.
So, with this having been through the Economic Development Council, right, and the Planning Commission, we've had input, I'm sure, from businesses. Would businesses be happy with this?
Happier.
How many businesses will we hear from say we didn't go far enough?
I'm sure you're always going to have some. But I think what we adopted was a good balance between maintaining that residential character for this village and working with the businesses. A lot of neighboring municipalities, they had the 32 square feet as their standard, and that was seen a while back as kind of the standard. When I was looking through sign codes, a lot of sign codes that were adopted around the site time that ours was back in, I think, 2009, had similar language. So it was just the trend at the time. However, I see a lot of recent sign code updates giving that flexibility to the businesses. So I think it's pretty obvious once the business owners pointed it out that what we had just isn't flexible enough. Not that it's bad.
You have comments or questions?
But their flexibility is coming from within the sign code, not due to this variance process.
Great.
Thank you, Trevor. Item 19, discussion regarding UWGB park and wayfinding sign designs. Craig, can you please sit on these?
This is an item that Trevor and I wanted to bring back to the board for discussion to move forward with. If you recall, we worked with a graphic design class from UWGB earlier this year. Maybe last year, maybe a little bit. That we were looking for some ideas on some designs for themes that we can have a common theme for all of our village signage that would run the gamut of park signage to entryway signage, wayfinding, anything that potential business district type signage, those type of things. So we wanted to come to the board and bring back some of the ideas that were from the class in your packet, are some of the highlighted pictures and ideas that the students had presented to the board, and as well as I just threw at the end of that packet is our alloy logo and the little swirly cube, as well as some ideas of options that we can look at. And what Trevor and I are looking for is just some feedback, some direction on how the board would like us to proceed so that we can begin to come up, work with some sign companies, come up with some designs now, that hard designs we can bring back to you for approval, and start changing out some of our signs. Currently, we do have budgeted for this year, fiscal year 2016, for replacement of some park signage, and then we'll be looking at during the budget process, taking some of those ideas as well for future years, future fiscal years, so we can begin to budget out replacement of those and how we would foresee possibly funding some of that.
Any thoughts? Trustee Harris.
In terms of just a comment or two about the designs they have as I reviewed them again, personally, I'd hope to avoid something along the lines of the first, I think the first page that says final designs, there's a built the community center, and then also when you get to the banner page, the middle design, in each of those instances, the normal sign that we would have horizontally has been flipped 90 degrees, and we have the sun to the left, and then as you move left to right, then the green for grass, and then to the right is the water. I don't think that would be something I'd be in favor of.
So try to avoid that vertical.
Correct. There are a couple different examples of other signs where they've sort of, the wording is to the, is switched on a 90 degree, but they didn't wrote the sun, land, and sea, or water is not rotated.
It's sure. Hanging on the side, and you don't like that. I kind of agree. Yeah. Takes away from what the original design meant, I think.
You would have to make sure that these fit our new sign code.
Definitely.
That's Trevor's job.
We could always ask for a variance.
Court plan commission.
Now you're just trying to circumvent the process.
I do recall one other comment. I believe it was Trustee Atwood had recommended that.
Yes, that was it, Brad.
You know, have a consistent font as well. Make sure this font all the way across is the same and consistent.
Okay, so moving forward, you want our direction on how to move forward.
Correct.
Do you have a recommended approach for moving forward?
Right. You know, what do you guys like? Do you like, you know, obviously we don't want that vertical orientation. Do we want to use any of these exact depictions? Or do we want to go a different direction?
Spelled Alloway right, I guess, is important.
Okay.
Yeah.
These were college students, remember.
I personally like these.
Okay.
With the brick on the bottom or stone on the bottom.
And it fits with an Armani sign theme.
Most likely.
I also like, if we can use the word Alloway, the font for the word Alloway, the way we already use it.
Okay.
So we use that font.
I also like the design of the park signs with the different circles in the middle. The thing that you said was really
which one?
Sure.
I think we'd also need to determine wherever we decide to use historically progressive, again, same font and style, because I realize different groups put these examples together for us. At times it was using a cursive script, and other times it was not. So again, just the consistency goes along with Trustee Atwood's suggestion on the same font style.
And I don't know, on the wayfinding signs, the signs I said I liked were mainly from the entrance signs, L, and the park signs. And I thought the mile marker signs were cool, basically pillars, but the banner signs, there isn't an example of a banner sign in the computer model that I like, I don't think.
Right, and with the banner signs, I don't believe that they ever really produced a good banner depiction. They had some ideas, and we discussed verbally on how that depiction could be, you know, placed within a rectangular banner, you know, and that type of a look. So.
So you would employ a design firm to do this, I'm guessing?
Correct. That is correct.
One other, aside from the signs, I've noticed throughout portions of De Pere, they've put up a, in essence, a post for securing a bicycle. And as we look for the Webster Riverside, the Arboretum, some sort of design for that, again, consistency, same theme, if we're going to be looking at those types of signs, let's include that from the beginning as well, please.
I would agree.
Especially the banner signs. Also, we've got decorative lighting coming in for what, Webster and Riverside in the next 10 to 15 years. And there are some really neat ones you can do on those that show up really well.
Did you get anything out of that so far?
I did. I just wanted to repeat, just to make sure that I heard correctly. We want to try to avoid that vertical orientation, utilizing the script within the design, that curly Q type of look. Be consistent with our font that is with our current logo. You like the looks of the stone within a monument. And utilizing, looking at the potential of utilizing those individual different circular park that identify each individual park, that look. And then come up as well in the future with a consistent theme for our street furnishings for redevelopment areas, such as, you know, the bike racks and other street type furnishings that would be associated with.
I'm not a big fan not only of the vertical sun and everything, but of the sun at all.
You don't like the sun?
I don't like the sun. No, I just don't like that design. I like incorporating the green and the blue and everything. None of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Personally.
Well, the Chris? Banners, I like the one on the right-hand side. I'm not so crazy about the really cute design racket. Extends over top. I don't really care one way or the other, but I know that reflects on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the artwork of the sign because it has an almost semi-impressionistic look to it.
Rob, do you mean this banner?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I agree. And then Chris, again, this would be long term, but as long as we're looking at conceptual design, if there would be.
Yes.
Any feedback that could be given regarding the replacement or repair of street signs throughout the village? I know that isn't a short-term change that we'd be doing, but again, if they're looking at a conceptual design, give us some suggestions regarding street signage.
Are you referring to street name signage that would have the little logo picture on the
mm-hmm.
end of it?
Any other input?
Not related to this specifically.
Is it part of the sign program?
Well, it's about the Christmas ornamentation we have on Webster.
It could fall under this.
It's kind of a sign thing, not really. If we're going to continue to purchase and expand that, or because I have businesses who have asked me and said, gosh, we'd love to have that coming our way.
Sure. We do have budget funds for expanding that program. We'll continue with what we had last year. Some of the things we're looking at doing real soon, we did purchase some banners. They're more kind of more standard type banners that we're going to hang around here for the farmers market, just a few of those, and that gives us an idea of size and what they look like so that in the future we can begin to place those as well which we can expand into the business districts to give us year-round appeal, not just the Christmas decoration during Christmas time. We'll be able to have those banners. With regards to the request, you had any specific locations, so you know to...
The people specifically by the Lorelei and North to Dr. Mark, those were people who were asking about,
okay.
Gosh, we love that, but it stopped too soon. And
sure.
My answer was, well, they didn't have, you know, we had a limited opportunity to buy what was there.
Right. And we still do in our inventory have quite a few of the decorations that we received from Green Bay. I'm forgetting the name.
On Broadway.
On Broadway, thank you. That we just need to update some of the lighting and that stuff and we'll be able to hang those. So, yes, we do plan to continue that process.
Okay. There are a lot of positive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Another question is, and I don't know if it's still kind of in the area of signage, but not really.
Let's not go too far.
How can I get any worse than I have tonight? You know, we mentioned once before about a type of signage at some point in the village, not dissimilar to what they have down in the third ward of Milwaukee, which crosses over the road in which we would say Historic Alloway. I have a picture of it someplace that I can share with you, but just something that adds a little bit more character to what we have. I can share a picture with you. It's probably on the time.
Cool. Have we given you the direction you're looking for?
I believe so. Now we will talk to some sign manufacturers, get the ball rolling, get some hard designs put together, and we can bring those back to the board and for further discussion or approval, and hope to get, you know, start the process of getting some of our signage updated.
Very nice. Item number 21, adjournment. Do I have a motion?
No.
Trustee Atwood, would you like to make a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We are adjourned.